from the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the Closing Market Report. It is the 25th day of January 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. He's in New Market, Indiana. And K-State's Dan O'Brien will join us closer to the bottom of the hour to take up the energy markets, in particular the decision in favor of E15 U.S. EPA made last week. Speaking of which, in today's agricultural news, we'll hear that U.S. EPA has just 30 days to decide the future of biomass boilers. The agency's final rule could alter the future of the developing U.S. industry. Oh, and Ohio legislator Sherrod Brown wants CFTC to look into this winter's crude oil market. He's wondered aloud about the speculative influence of index funds. And the IMF expects the global economy is doing better than the last time it took measure of the world's financial health. Dave Dickey will have details of these and other stories shortly. And in just 26 minutes, meteorologist Don Day will be here to look at the agricultural weather forecast. So stay with us for this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
Checking the numbers as they settled up in Chicago on this Tuesday afternoon. Futures from the wheat pit were higher. The nearby March at 8.38 1/4 on the last trade up 3 cents. The May softer at 8.65 1/2, 3 3/4 higher. And July at 8.82 1/2, up 3 3/4. Hard red in Kansas City, 9.5 cents the gain in the lead option March at $9.17 1/2. From the corn pit, futures were lower, $6.44 the settlement price in the March contract at 11 1/4. Down. May futures 6.54 1/4, down 10 3/4. In July, corn in Chicago, $6.59, 10 1/2 lower. September at 6.12 3/4, down 8 1/2. In December contract, the new crop corn at $5.79, down 8 1/4. March beans at 13.74 1/2, down 30. May down 29 1/2 at 13.85 1/2. July at 13.92 1/4, down 29 3/4. And the November beans at $13.12 3/4, down 24 cents. Bean meal futures were down $7.60. Bean oil futures were down $1.40, both of those the lead option. February live cattle, 52 1/2 cents lower at 106.25. January feeders at 125. 5.97 1/2, down 37 1/2. The lean hog futures finished at $81.82 1/2. They were up $1.17 1/2. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures March contract $86.27 a barrel, down $1.60. Ethanol at $2.27 8/10, 4 2/10 lower. Natural gas at $4.48, down a dime on the afternoon. February heating oil, that's diesel fuel, 2 4/10% lower, 2.59 4/10. And the gold futures, $1,332.30 an ounce, down $12.20. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, now at 11,906. That's just about 74 points lower. The dollar at 78 even is down 0.04. And the CRB index at 327.57, down 5.13 on the day. The weather forecast from the National Weather Service says in Urbana-Champaign this afternoon, skies will be mostly cloudy, a high near 29 degrees. Light and variable winds. Tonight, mostly cloudy. A low of just 16 degrees. Calm winds becoming out of the north-northwest at around 6 miles an hour. Tomorrow, partly sunny. A high near 26. North-northwest winds between 6 and 9 tomorrow. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy. A low of 14 degrees. West-northwest winds at 5 to 8. And then on Thursday, a chance of flurries. Mostly cloudy during the day. A high of 28 degrees. West-southwest winds between 5 and 8 miles an hour. Thursday night should be mostly cloudy, a low of 20. Friday, mostly cloudy, a high of 33. And Friday night, mostly cloudy, a low around 24 degrees. The extended forecast says Saturday will be partly sunny, a high of 36. Saturday night, mostly cloudy, a low of 17. On Sunday, partly sunny, the high near 28 degrees. More on the ag weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the hour. And we talk with Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
It's a Tuesday afternoon. Time to check the cash grain markets, rather the agricultural futures markets. On the phone line with us from L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, John Hester. He's in for Wayne Nelson this afternoon. John, thanks so much for filling in. We do appreciate you taking the time with us today.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
Well, you picked a good day, I suppose, if you wanted something to talk about, because the beans marched sharply lower. What was the cause?
Well, I think... start out, the tone was set early this morning when U.S. Announced a bean purchase from China, and everybody assumed it was in the old crop, and then they came back and said that they wanted it in the new crop, the 11-12 year. So, you know, I think that was a little bit of a disappointment and kind of set the tone. And really, other than that, and under improving weather in Argentina and Brazil, there's really not much new news, and I think the majority of the down was the disappointment on the sale and wholesale profit-taking, especially in the beans today. So guys banking money, and they went down. The experts say rock-solid support should be at 635 in the corn. We went down to 39, so that's pretty close. Hopefully it's bottomed out there, and the support in the beans was, March beans was 70 to 75, and we closed at 74, so, you know, hopefully we went down and hit solid support, and tonight they'll start clawing their way out of here.
The overnight trade will be very important then.
Yes, it will.
And I suppose you'll have to come back in and take a look at that.
I probably will.
Well, that's the life of a broker and yeah, marketing now that is almost 24 hours a day. So let's talk just a little bit more about this sale. So the reason that folks were disappointed, I suppose, is that their expectations would have been that that would have been for old crop soybeans, and that would be proof that China is still in need of fulfilling their needs for this year.
Right.
And the idea that they went out and bought for next year didn't set very well with people. Is that kind of
correct? I think that's the majority of it, or it surprised them. It still shows that they're going to need food for next year, and but, you know, I think they were hoping that this would be maybe to reap either to use for food now or replenish their stockpiles. But it still shows that a year down the road they're concerned about their soybean needs.
So this is the second week in a row we've had a drop in the marketplace. Last week, I think, scared a few people, thinking that maybe we were chopping through a top end. Does this give you pause to think about where this market might be headed or not?
Well, I guess myself personally, I have, you know, there's no signs of rationing showing up yet. So, you know, I think we have to have a degree of rationing. And, you know, you also got to remember in the March corn, we're only, 22.5 cents off contract highs.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it hadn't done any real chart damage. And I don't remember what the contract high is in the March beans, but I don't know, 13.30 or 40. So, you know, compared to the corn, we're, you know, they're about in tandem with each other, and so, you know, we're still pretty close to the contract highs, and no tart damage has been done, but, you know, we've got used to have it going up every day.
Indeed, and so having it set back is not that big a problem, I suppose.
Well, you know, I think that makes for a healthy market. Anything that goes straight up is dangerous, and, you know, this way we're going up and backfilling a little bit and going back up, so I think, you know, I think it makes for a healthy market when we do this. Now, you know, have the highs been put in? You know, possibly. I don't think so, but they possibly could have. And, you know, this could be the beginning of a larger down move. But, you know, it's got to break some chart points before that is concluded.
All right. Well, so thank you very much, and we do appreciate you filling in for Wayne this afternoon.
All right. Thank you for having me.
Mm-hmm.
Bye.
John Hester is with L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Tuesday afternoon.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a production of Illinois Public Media. You can read all about us and hear all of our ag programming anytime you'd like off our website. The address is willag.org. You can also find out about our all-day Agricultural Outlook meeting. It's the 21st annual, scheduled for the 8th day of March at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Buy your tickets soon at willag.org. More on how to do that in just a moment. Dave Dickey is here now. He'll take you through the agricultural news on this Tuesday afternoon.
In agricultural news, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency has 30 days to issue final rules on biomass boilers that could alter the course of the developing biomass industry. A U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia judge has denied the EPA's request for an extension to April of 2012. EPA requested an extension because the agency was having difficulty working through some 4,800 public comments received on the proposed rule. Senator Sherrod Brown is urging Commodity Futures Trading Commission Chairman Gary Gensler to use his new authority under the Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act to investigate whether excessive speculation by hedge funds and index funds is contributing to the unusual winter rise in petroleum prices. Near-term futures prices are in the $90 per barrel range. The International Monetary Fund today raised its projections for overall global economic output to an increase of 4.4% in 2011, slightly higher than its last report of 4.2%. The IMF gave the United States the largest projected increase compared with its October report, raising anticipated economic growth in 2011 from 2.3% to 3%. The IMF made no change in its forecasts for the rest of the world, with Asian giants leading the way, China at 9.6% and India at 8.4% growth. Senator John Barrasso plans to offer a bill that would strip the Environmental Protection Agency of its authority to issue greenhouse gas emissions rules, despite a White House threat to veto such legislation. And West Virginia Democrat John Rockefeller also plans to reintroduce a bill similar to the one he offered in 2010, which would suspend for 2 years EPA's authority to regulate greenhouse gas emissions. India's central bank raised interest rates today by a quarter of a percentage point to clamp down on inflation and warned of persistently higher food prices unless steps are taken to boost supplies. India's food prices have been rising at double digits for much of the past year, and its headline inflation in December rose to 8.43% from 7.48% in November. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. You can hear what Dave has to say and all about our ag programming anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Tuesday afternoon. Time to check the agricultural energy markets. Dan O'Brien of K-State in Kansas now joins us. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Hello, how's it going, Todd?
Oh, it's going very well. You sent me a little paper that you had put together on last week's announcement from US EPA that it would extend an E15 waiver to cars and trucks built as early as 2001. Wanted to talk about that this afternoon and what the ramifications might be of E15 or 15% ethanol in the supply of gasoline in the United States. You want to start by talking a bit about the situation and what came to pass last week?
Sure. On Friday, the 21st of January, the EPA extended an earlier waiver allowing for fuels for use of E15. Again, we're using E10 now, is approved in U.S. vehicles, in all U.S. vehicles, but for E15 concentrations to be used for vehicles produced in 2007 or later. That'd be for cars and trucks. The waiver does not extend to motorcycles, heavy-duty vehicles, or non-road engines, so it doesn't hit every vehicle, but for most cars and trucks it does. It follows a similar decision made in October of last year when the EPA approved a waiver to allow use of E15 for again, 2007 and newer cars and trucks, for model year 2007 newer cars and trucks. What was decided on last week was 2001 through 2006, and this is in response to a suit brought by a lobbying group for the ethanol industry by the name of Growth Energy and 54 ethanol plants, and basically it makes the use of E15 available to about 60% of the nation's cars and pickups. So it's an important decision and has ramifications on going in several directions. It's important, an important positive decision for the ethanol industry. There are consumer groups, of course, the American petroleum industry and some of their lobbying groups have serious questions about this. But I guess it's the type of discussion that we would have in any major policy decision that affects so many people and so much revenue in our economy.
What did the government officials say about the decision and why it was made?
Well, EPA Administrator Lisa Jackson indicated that she'd made the decision after reviewing thorough tests by the U.S. Department of Energy and another available data on E15 effects on emissions for older cars and light trucks to match their earlier work. And her statement is that basically recently completed testing and data analysis show that E15 does not harm emissions control equipment in the newer or lighter trucks. USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack supported the decision. He's looking more towards the economic development aspects of things, support for agricultural markets on the grain production side. His statement is that expanding the use of E15 in America's vehicle fleet gives consumers the option of purchasing domestically produced renewable transportation fuels and supports farmers and ranchers. So, again, statements that you'd expect given the different types of positions and constituencies that those governmental officials are dealing with.
Of course, Tom Baez, Bob Dinane of Growth Energy, and then the president of Renewable Fuels Association came out and naturally supported the decision. Senator Grassley from Iowa, I thought it was kind of important that he got a personal call from from U.S. EPA Administrator.
Senator Grassley is very able political leader in the country, a very strong supporter of all of this. And as you'd mentioned, he, along with the Growth Energy and Renewable Fuels people, see this as a very important decision for their industry. And you'd expect it so, given the interest that they have. So they look at these things as bold moves forward. In fact, would like to see it, enablement of use of a B15 done for all vehicles. And again, where opponents come in on this is that they make statements that, well, the research may not be complete, and they're hesitant to approve a rush to judgment, as they would talk about. So I think these are important issues that we'll have to watch. Here we've had a good set of research by the Department of Energy that says that there won't be problems with vehicles, with gasoline station pumps, et cetera. But yet other research coming from independent sources saying, well, we think there might be problems. So these are critically important issues in our fuel supply. And if the science upon which the DOE, Department of Energy decision, wouldn't hold up, then we'd have major problems that would be coming upon us later on. So, of course, from a public policy point of view, you hope the research is sound.
Yeah, so from both sides, the positive and the negative side in this part of the debate, it's really about the science of whether E15 can be used in the distribution system and in the automobiles, 2001 and newer, and not cause a problem. U.S. EPA says we've done the testing and it's perfectly fine. And there are still some from the oil industry side that say, nah, we don't think that's right. But, of course, the government's the government, and this rule has been mandated at this point for E15. And then I wonder, is it predicated, do you think, on the government's part, still on the idea that they'd like to have a fuel supply that is homegrown and more reliable potentially than that comes out of the Mideast?
I think that's certainly part of it. When we had such sky-high fuel prices back in 2007, 2008, there were billions of dollars saved in expenses to the U.S. economy by having ethanol available, again, a domestically produced product. There are some numbers that, along the lines of $30 and $40 billion of consumer expenditures that were saved by having just that much more fuel available to keep prices from really going that much higher, again, $4 plus. And so it was a good help to consumers, the economy in general, to have those supplies of ethanol available. Yeah. So that certainly is part of the issue, I think.
Yeah, take up a couple of other comments. A couple of ag economists weighed in. Bob Wisner, formerly of Iowa State, now retired, dropped one in on this one too. He looked at some of the numbers, and they're astounding.
They are. If we move from current levels up to full production of E15, you're probably looking at about 21 billion gallons of ethanol being produced per year, using about 7.5 billion bushels of corn. And we produce about 13 to 14 billion bushels of corn in any one year, given our capacity at this time. So if we move completely to E15, there'll be strong competition for usage and likely some reshuffling or displacement of competitive uses, and those competitive uses are livestock feeding on the one hand and exports on the other, and some other domestic corn milling industries on the other hand. So without question, big issues. There are challenges, though, in full adoption. Again, not all pumps are set up to handle this. There are some questions in the future about if the blender's credit will be operable either at full level or at a reduced level beyond 2011. So you've got some real politics and economics at play in trying to figure out where this industry will go, and if we'll see the full adoption of E15, bringing, again, 20 to 21 billion gallons of ethanol production and full use of 7.5 billion bushels of corn in the U.S. economy. So. Yeah. Big issues.
And then wrap up, Pat Westhoff of Missouri also had some comments. We only have about a minute left.
Well, I think that Westhoff basically said that the impacts of this will be more long-run than short-run. In the short run, again, we have issues of transition to worry about, a number of things, dealing with certificates called RINs in the past that pull usage forward or backwards. Overall, though, I think although there are inhibitions to full adoption in the short run, in the long run, if this remains a law of the land, which it's very likely to do, then we'll see some shifting in U.S. agriculture, particularly in the corn production sectors, over towards supporting ethanol production, and we'll see changes in the U.S. Energy mixture.
Thank you so much, Dan.
Thanks, Todd.
Dan O'Brien is with K-State. You've been listening and are listening to the Closing Market Report. I'll be back in just 2 minutes with the agricultural weather forecast.
It's National Irish Coffee Day. It's also Dinner Party Out Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1787, in Shays' Rebellion, a group of poor farmers protesting high taxes marched into Springfield, Massachusetts to seize the federal arsenal. Shays' Rebellion caused George Washington to emerge from retirement to advocate a stronger national government. In 1799, the Lycum Spooner of Vermont patented a gravity-feed seed planting machine. But it was not until 1840 that a truly practical seed planting machine was developed when Joseph Gibbons received a patent for a machine that combined a grain drill with cavities to deliver the seed and a device to regulate the volume. In 1915, Alexander Graham Bell inaugurated U.S. Transcontinental Telephone Service, speaking from New York to Thomas Watson in San Francisco. By the way, the phone line used 2,500 tons of copper wire and 130,000 telephone poles. In 1945, Bing Crosby and the Andrews Sisters topped the charts with Don't Fence Me In. By the way, Crosby recorded the song without ever having previously heard of it or seen it. And in 1955, U.S. and Panama signed the Panama Canal Treaty. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a Tuesday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason. Don Day of Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming now joins us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast for the Midwest, the nation, and the world. So if we're going to talk about the Midwest and the nation, I suppose we ought to talk about cold weather and snow coverage and whether any place is lacking that for the wheat crop. What do you see across the nation?
Well, certainly, as you get out into western Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas Panhandle, portions of eastern Colorado, those areas have lacked snow cover all winter and are dry and continue to be dry, although there's a little bit of a prospect for some moisture developing in those areas this weekend and early next week. But those would be the areas that definitely need some snow cover and some moisture.
And let's stay with the wheat crop. I want to jump to the southern hemisphere, to Australia, where they had just torrential rainfall. Rabobank, I made note in a story from the Toronto Star today, is suggesting that all that rainfall could be very, very good for their next crop. They put a lot of water in the bank, so to speak, both in soil moisture and in places that they irrigate. What do you see there?
Well, there's they're not done with the rains in Australia. While we are going to be looking at the shower and thunderstorm chances and the better rains across the northern and western areas, we're going to need to watch some of the central and eastern areas of Australia next week. Possibly could get wet in those areas again. Certainly, there's no indication that the weather in Australia will reverse and go to very dry. It's going to stay active, unsettled, and some areas still wet.
And let's stay in the southern hemisphere, back across to South America, Brazil, and Argentina. They've had a tough time for the growing season in Argentina. They're a good portion of the way through it at this point. Will they finish up with decent rainfall?
Argentina's prospects for rains are looking better. At least here in the short term. We've got some storminess that's going to be tracking a little bit further south, deeper into Argentina instead of being so far north into Brazil. So cautiously optimistic that some of the growing areas of Argentina could be looking at some rainfall, decent rainfall, as well as many areas of Brazil here over the next 10 days.
And then I'd like to come back to the northern hemisphere, if we could talk about some of the growing regions in Asia, in the former Soviet republics, in Europe. They'll be setting up for their growing season this coming spring. Did they get enough rainfall and snow over the winter time to make that happen in a nice way?
Well, there's going to be some portions of Russia that are still going to probably go into the spring season with a moisture deficit from what they had over the summer. That would be the far eastern areas, although there's certainly been adequate snow in those areas, and some help will be on the way as the spring season goes in there with some snowpack and some good snow cover melting. The rest of Europe, Western Europe, had a very snowy winter. It'll probably have more episodes of snow, and soil moisture content in most of Europe should be good, especially Central and Western Europe.
Okay, thank you so much, and appreciate you taking the time. Hey, that's Don Day. He's with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Tuesday afternoon. I just checked in to see how sales, pre-sales, and registration for our All-Day Ag Outlook meeting were going. 152 already sold. Capacity is only about 400. We haven't been trying to sell these for very long. If you'd like to join us on that day, probably ought to get on the phone now and dial this number, 800 528-7980. It's $20. Ask about the All-Day Ag Outlook meeting, 800-528-7980. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report. You have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.